that note, hello everyone.
Hello.
Happy Thanksgiving week.
Yes. 'Tis the season to be hungry.
And yes.
Also.
La, 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 la. Sorry.
Grumble, grumble, grumble.
Yes. That is yes.
My stomach speaking to you. But this
Beautiful.
Is a plant podcast where my hostess of the mostest and I discuss all things plants related or randomly, somehow vaguely related to plants. And
somehow.
Because of the season, we will be talking about Thanksgiving plants.
Yes.
Yes. And I guess I'll introduce myself in case you don't know who I am. But I am Tori.
No.
Hostess.
Wait. What's going on?
Oh.
Well, my name is Taylor, yeah. And the person who was just talking
yes.
is Tori.
Yeah, I think I already introduced myself.
Oh, you did? Oh, sorry. I wasn't.
It's okay.
Have I ever talked about my listening problem on this podcast?
One of the ears doesn't work.
Yeah. I do have a little bit of hearing loss. I wish I could blame that. Probably not the reason. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
My name's Taylor.
Yeah. Which we already also said, but it's okay. So this is a podcast. The theme is Thanksgiving plants because
yes.
of the season, because of all of your guys' extremely hungry stomachs. We will talk
yes.
about the plants that were possibly involved in the first Thanksgiving.
Right.
And there's
this is going to be
yes.
pretty vague potential relation.
Yeah, because if you guys didn't know, the first Thanksgiving was like a really long time ago. So we can't be sure. And if you're sure, you're probably wrong.
Yes.
Because you weren't there.
Guaranteed.
So you
yeah.
can't know. And all of the documents of said Thanksgiving was in old mm-hmm. fucking English, so it doesn't even make sense.
No.
It's like legalese. You can't understand. It's per interpretation of the law. That's what
exactly.
this is.
Exactly. Just less important.
Yeah. Exactly. Less impactful.
But yes, definitely. Definitely been some interpretation yeah. done over the years and substitutions.
Yes.
I was honestly surprised by how much could have actually been at the first Thanksgiving,
yeah.
honestly. It was like, okay, like, I'm, you
yeah.
know, I'm actually kind of on board with this.
Yeah,
like,
why is it so specific now?
Yeah, yeah.
Our
so
menu
we could
was
really
much
have a,
larger.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we could have so much going on. It kind of makes me laugh because a lot of my friends actually don't like Thanksgiving food generally, which
oh, weird.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. But, like, traditional, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like, oh, okay, well, I mean, if they just went back to, you know,
yeah.
original sort of native foods,
yeah.
like, they could have a much more interesting spread.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I remember one Thanksgiving, my parents went Mediterranean themed, because
oh.
my mom who had, or I guess she technically still has cancer, but my parents were trying to do a more, like, healthy alternative, because she had this whole like
oh,
Mediterranean
yeah.
cookbook, which is supposed to help.
Yeah,
but then she would still drink alcohol, which is like the worst thing you could possibly do for cancer. So,
well, there is that.
They tried.
There's antioxidants
yeah.
in there somewhere, right?
Yeah. Well,
I'm kidding.
Yeah, they didn't even drink wine. It was like the worst possible.
Oh,
it was beer.
I don't know why I thought you said wine. Never mind.
Selective
this is, again, my
hearing.
Listening.
One ear doesn't work.
Yeah, if I ever say anything that Tori just said, or I have already
ear.
Said,
that's another
yeah.
T-shirt on idea. Just blame it on the ear.
Yep, I like that.
But yeah, it was like mostly fish, and so my dad
yes.
like went, like he tried to make his own ravioli. It was like lobster,
oh.
all that fun, crazy
Dang.
Stuff. It was really good, but it was interesting because it was, like, not typical Thanksgiving food whatsoever.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
so it's like, do
mix
what
it up
you
a
want.
Little bit.
Like, mix it up. I mix it
yeah.
up. You can mix
no
it
rules.
Up.
No rules. Yeah, exactly.
Just pretend you have cancer.
And have some beer.
Yeah, and then have beer anyways because it doesn't matter. I'm already dying.
healthy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep. This already kind of escalated. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
So, planner action. Let's start this off we usually do with a planner action of the week. So, yes. Tori, what is yours this particular
so
week?
So, my week and or planner action of the week is... So, I don't know if you've seen, but it's fall outside. And I live in...
I have not.
I know. And I was like... Which reminds me, I didn't live in season before. So this is my first time having my own property.
Yeah.
And having my own seasonal property. So I have...
With leaves.
Yeah, I have leaves everywhere. And so I had to make... I had to literally rake my own pile of leaves this year. And it was the weirdest feeling and exciting and... I didn't get a picture, and I wish I did.
Aw.
I know.
Oh my gosh. I would have been all over that.
I know. I felt like such a terrible millennial. I was like, fuck, I didn't take a picture of everything I did and accomplished in life.
Damn it.
Yeah. I throw it away in my compost bin that I had to pay for every month. And then I just realized, oh man, I didn't even get a picture of my first pile of leaves.
I would have jumped in that shit so fast.
The problem was it wasn't very jumpable. It was wet.
Oh.
It was a wet pile of leaves.
You know.
And then like randomly found a piece of like dog poop underneath the pile of leaves. Like, I don't have a dog. Whose is this?
No.
You bitch.
That's a little concerning.
Yeah, clean it up for your dog, random stranger. At my doorstep.
This was in your front yard.
This was in my front yard.
Okay.
I do have random cats in my backyard.
Oh, I was going to say, that might be.
Yeah, so if I find cat poop, I know who to blame.
Yep.
All of my neighbors, because everyone has cats.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But yeah, that's mine.
Okay.
A pile
of
leaves.
Good. Nice. So my planner action this week, I just wanted to bring up that I have started my permaculture certification class.
Ooh.
I know, it's very fun. Mm-hmm. I am having a blast so far. Everything is very interesting, and I just love it all. Just sustainable agriculture and social justice and design all rolled up into one.
Oh,
it's
beautiful.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. That was one thing I did want to bring up in relation to this week's topic, which we'll talk about as well, is, you know, more the acknowledgement of Indigenous perspective of this holiday and just kind of what we should be sort of acknowledging or doing to kind of help out more on that side of things as opposed to, you know, this beautiful day of genocide. So here we go.
Yeah, let's not ignore that.
No.
Pretty
definitely not.
Important.
Yeah, kind of the reason we're all here is the horrific
death,
sacrifice,
and
genocide
of
an entire...
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so...
On a positive note.
Yes. So anyway, one of the things that we kind of discussed, even our first kind of class meeting, they had us kind of introduce ourselves, not only using kind of pronouns, which I really appreciated a lot of... you know, podcasts or, you know, just kind of generally in the media, they're trying to make that more of a normal thing, which
it's
is great.
Recognize it and accept it.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's just kind of normalizing it and, you know, kind of acknowledging everyone without having to, you know, make it a thing. Because everyone's like, oh, how do I know that they want to be called that? It's like, well, we could just make it a common thing to, like, introduce yourself with.
Yeah.
So, crazy. Like, there's a solution. Not only they're trying to normalize that, but also saying whose original territory that you're living on, which Indigenous tribe's territory that you're currently residing on. So instead of saying, like, oh, hi, like, my name is Taylor, I use he, she pronouns, or, God damn it, I always say that wrong.
She, her pronouns.
Okay. Yeah, pronouns. I mean, you can call me he if you really want to. Wouldn't be the first time.
Seriously, the amount of times I've been misunderstood as a butch lesbian.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's fine. I'll take whatever.
Sure, actually, I don't care.
Yeah, really. It's like, you know, it's a spectrum.
Yeah, to be
but
honest.
But yeah, generally, yeah. Taylor, she, her.
Yeah.
I live on Tongva, Oshaman, and Kesey land. So that's kind of the way, especially they're trying to, it's called territory acknowledgement. So
yeah.
This is something that's often performed, mostly at like public events or, I mean, in this case, it's specifically in a landscape or a design context. So
right.
Wherever lands you're, you know, designing on or wherever you're talking about, that's kind of just a good thing. You know, you learn how to pronounce the tribal names as well as just acknowledging that up front. Like, hey, you know, we're all gathered here right now. Let's take a moment and, you know, how did we get here?
Yeah.
Well,
by the way,
let's take a moment to acknowledge this. And, it, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, if kind of diving a little deeper into that, you know, a really good territory acknowledgement will also kind of provide potential solutions to, you know, combat colonialism and its mm-hmm. long-term effects. Like, you know, not only was it horrible at the time, but there are reaching consequences that still exist today for these communities.
Definitely. Yeah. It's
so it's
ridiculous.
It's just a good way, you know, kind of, you know, a little bit of outreach maybe. There's kind of some things, several things that can be done, and some of it's specific to each, you know, whatever territory you're in, but there's a lot of organizations out there that you can support, or even just kind of reach out to as far as when you're working in these particular areas, or if you want to just get to know in your own community, kind of where you stand on that. But anyway, just thought that was kind of something we could practice today.
Let's do it.
Tori's is a little easier.
Yes. It's very clear.
Yes. Easier to remember, for sure.
Yeah.
but she's on, I mean, I don't know if you want to do it, but
I mean, I'll get one of them, yes. I live in Spokane, Washington, which
yes.
is the territory of Spokane. And
yes.
what was the second tribe?
Tunaha.
Tunaha tribe.
Yes. Yes.
So I want to recognize and support said tribes that
yes.
once lived here and were kicked out of said land.
Yep.
And that's
exactly.
a nice way of saying.
Yes. To put it mildly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So one thing we both kind of did a little history, so this might be just a kind of a refresher or maybe some new information for you guys, just kind of going back to the first Thanksgiving. Again, we're going to try to talk about the plants that were
right.
sort of potentially used at that time, but also just a little bit about that, you know, kind of that first
yeah.
first potential gathering.
It's hard
there.
To talk about just the plants when you don't really have any context.
Right. So a little bit of context
yes.
first. So we'll kind of go back and forth a little bit on that. But just for starters, you know, there were generations before the first Thanksgiving, European settlers were showing up on American shores. So
mm-hmm.
that kind of first, you know, this may have been kind of a somewhat attempt at a peaceful gathering at
right.
this time, but there had been history of the white man coming over and causing problems for generations before this Thanksgiving take place. So that
yep.
just to give a little bit of context for that situation, it wasn't like, oh, they're who are these people? Let's reach out to them and be nice. No, it was more like, let's stop all of these issues. Like maybe if we try to help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Might solve some problems. Obviously, that wasn't the way that attention ended up working out. Mm-hmm. But so that's kind of one of the many stories you might a little bit of context anyway for a lot of these sort of first Thanksgiving stories.
It wasn't a party. Let's just
no, say. No. So the Wampanoag tribe was most likely. They were the ones living on that particular area, that Plymouth Rock area at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, again, kind of potentially an attempt to improve relations with people,
mm-hmm.
With the white people coming over. And again, it just, all of the laws, the treaties, just flagrant discrimination from
yeah.
hundreds of years still persists today.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Just want to, you know, I think it's really important to kind of remove that whitewashing of the history of it and just kind of get into that a little bit.
Right.
And again, one of the things we've been talking about in class as well is this, you know, getting land back to indigenous peoples. It's actually a key, they see it as a key role in environmental justice. Because, like, no one knows how better to care for the land than people have been on it for hundreds of years. Like,
right.
Can't, way beyond how long we've been here at this point.
Yeah. And we were educated by these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
To take care of.
We would have died.
Yeah. Honestly, to be honest. Yeah. Like,
so quickly.
Yeah.
But even like fire management, especially in like California, yeah. places like that, it's like we need to get back to these more, you know, even the indigenous practices right. of controlled burns and things like that that have been practiced for centuries until kind of fucked it all up. So yep. there's yep. there's always that. So just to get into some of the additional ways of kind of being able to help indigenous peoples mm-hmm. around, just again to bring it up around this time of year especially, but always a year-round thing that can be acknowledged. So there are things called land taxes. Some are optional in certain regions. I know there's one in Northern California, the Shumi tax that you can give to annually that helps kind of the local tribe, which is the Shumi tribe, provide education and just right. kind of generally support the tribe. There's a lot of land back movements, which is literally, it can be more metaphorical, or literally attempts or organizations that are trying to get land back to Native peoples. There's been some people have donated land, or, you know, just donating money, of course, always helps to kind of help these efforts.
Right.
And yeah, just any sort of rematriation efforts are great to support. And I think I brought this up on a previous episode, is supporting Native American growers. Mm-hmm. You can go online and buy several products, especially like wild rices and things like that, that are native grown. So if that's something, you know, kind of a staple in your kitchen, you know, consider doing a little research and maybe supporting hopefully a local tribe. But if not, there's a lot of online resources where you can just, you know, easy enough, like an Amazon order or something.
Right.
That where you can kind of help support that. One person I want to bring up, Sean Sherman. He wrote the Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen.
Oh, cool!
And it's actually uses traditional Native foods. So not only during Thanksgiving time, but that is something that he kind of encourages, is branching out and going, you know, trying out some more Native recipes during this time of year. And, you know, just kind of exploring what's available around you, what's native to your region, and kind of keeping that in mind with cooking. So, you know, again, I think that's kind of a great idea for yeah. those who may not like the traditional food or want to explore some healthier options. He kind of talks about they spend hours collecting or just kind of foraging, like chanterelles, ginger, chokeberries, wild plums, like wild rice, like cattails, all the stuff that's like kind of unique, but it's something that you know, would have been used back in the day, and kind of a little piece of history that you can experience.
Yeah. And if you think about just the impact, like environmentally, instead
yeah.
of trying
oh, yeah.
to get something from countries or states away for your mm-hmm. one craving of something random, just eat
yes.
something local that's probably similar enough to that's
yeah.
just fine. Like, just think about
buy local.
How,
and
yeah, just think about it, like, logically, how simple it would be to just encourage an environment that you currently live in and supports it, instead of
right.
trying to force a different type of ecology on an area that physically can't support it or
exactly
naturally can't. And so you have to force its way in there, which is obviously bad for the environment.
Right.
Like
right.
trying to grow a shit ton of high water things in a desert. Like, hey,
yes.
wait a second.
Weird.
This is really bad for our to have all of our produce be produced in a single state that's a
yeah.
that's considered a desert, and they're most of it's high water. Wait
right.
a second.
Yeah. Almonds.
Yeah.
Let's produce the world's almonds.
Yeah.
Why?
In a desert. Just
yeah.
think about it. For once.
Fantastic.
Let's just do this someplace with a lot of fucking water.
It's that makes so much sense.
But
anyway,
but
yeah,
I digress.
Thought processes. Yeah, it's always an issue. But yeah, I was kind of surprised again how many plants actually could potentially have been actually used in that first Thanksgiving. Yeah. You know, there's, I just assumed it had been literally whitewashed with, you know, mm-hmm. kind of red. I mean, in a way it definitely has, but, you know, right. It's the food itself. It's like, oh, okay. I mean, and if you interpret it in that, you know, maybe not the exact same, you know, variety of whatever, but, you know, you can easily interpret it. Yeah, yeah. Obviously not probably, you know, they didn't have the
sugar
mushroom cream of mushroom soup.
Nope. I think that's a pretty
French
new thing.
Cut green beans.
So that actually came from a recipe card on the back of a Campbell's can. And it became a staple just from that one recipe suggestion.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's...
Which is kind of, and like the whole
crazy how these things,
TV dinner is started from in case you didn't know, fun fact, from people ordering too much turkey and they couldn't get rid of it all. So they had to create frozen dinner. Did you not know that?
No.
Yeah. So that's the whole frozen, that's how TV dinners were like came
started
from.
Off as turkey.
Yeah. They started as like Thanksgiving dinners because they ordered too much turkey. I think it was Stouffer's. I could be wrong. But they made they ordered too many turkeys and they couldn't do anything with them. It was like, I think it was like 2000. They were originally ordered 2000. They asked like an extra zero at the end or something like that. So like, what the fuck? We can't, this is going to expire. We didn't do something with this shit. And so that was the creation of the TV dinner.
Ordering
too much turkey. And so they like had cranberry sauce, all that fun stuff on the side.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Learn something new every podcast.
Yes. What do you know?
Yeah, tune in every other week with Plantaholics.
Nice. I love it. Yeah. All right. So I have a little more history, but it's more related to my plants. So I don't know if you want to chime in with anything before we move on to the plants.
I guess history-wise, kind of touching on this misconception of what Thanksgiving was. It was I mean, according to most historians, it was not considered a celebration. It was, in some instances, like history.com, they claim it as, like, the Native Americans that were indigenous to that area coming in to check in on the settlers of that area. Yeah. Because at that time, they were struggling. There wasn't a lot. It wasn't a thriving community yet. And they were checking in on them because of a recent pact that was created, and it wasn't a planned celebration. They were checking in because they heard gunfire, and it ended up being a practice, and it ended up being like a 3-day kind of, it was more of like a pact treaty celebration, I guess, where there was a lot of, they did eat and they did feast. It was also educational, but it was a lot of shooting.
But it was more like attempt at peacemaking, but it was more,
it was
they'd already seen
casual
some
it was not a planned, it wasn't exactly like this huge like, we think you're great, come and we will feed you. It was more you know, I know we've had problems in the past, we're coming to check in with you, like you killed off like half of our population by coming on this land, but we don't want any more of that.
Right.
And I think another thing that's a common misconception is the amount of people at the first Thanksgiving. So colonists were likely outnumbered more than 2-1 by Native Americans. And there were about 90 men. 78% of the women who actually traveled to the Mayflower ended up perishing that winter. So there were only about 50 colonists, and like 22 of them were men. And there were 4 women. That was it.
Wow.
I mean, imagine the possible, like, incestual shit going on. And there were 25 children and teenagers, so that there's that. But, I mean, 4 women.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really small amount of women.
I would run.
Like, in all of the survival games I've played, it's switched. You only need 4 men.
It's 100%.
Yeah, like, just
you are not gonna live with only 4 women.
Saying, like, if that doesn't make you feel really uncomfortable for our origin story, like,
yeah,
okay. Just.
Oh my
But gosh. Yes, it was like a mutual defense pact negotiated the previous spring. And so they were kind of bringing aid to the pilgrims because they heard repeated gunfire. That's one interpretation. So they assumed they were under attack. Yeah. Just kind of touching on that the fact that they even were able to settle there was after the death of like millions of Native people.
Yeah.
Like the yeah. fact that they were able to even like build their little fucking houses there.
Yeah.
Was on the yeah. death of millions of Native
people. 100%.
So just yep. put that into
perspective. Don't forget it.
Yeah.
Whatever you do.
Let's just never forget the fact that that's why they yeah. could do that.
Yep.
So.
And yeah. And not only that, but it's why we're all here today.
Yes.
Like after hundreds of years of continued oppression. So.
Yeah. that's all I wanted to say. That's all my research pretty much said was like,
okay. This is stupid. No, that's great.
By yep. the way. Yep.
It's a good summary of what yeah. we should be focusing on. But this is a plant podcast, so yes. I guess we should eventually talk about some plants. Yes. Do you want to take a quick break and we'll come right back?
Sounds great. We'll see you in a bit.
Welcome back after that very long break.
Yes. Deep breaths.
Still here? Yes. We're good?
Good. All right.
Let's do this. So we kind of broke up just into some different plants. So the ones I focused on are part of the Three Sisters. That might be a term you're familiar with. I think that might be like a second grade common phrase thrown around when they teach you about the first Thanksgiving. So the Three Sisters plants or the Three Sisters garden, that refers to the three kind of major crops of the Native Americans at that time, which consist of corn, beans, and squash.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of have some fun facts about each of the plants, and then just I'll start off with some info just about those plants in general. Mm-hmm. So essentially, when these crops are eaten together, it's just an excellent nutritional balance. So you have plenty of carbohydrates, protein, healthy fats, and vitamins. So it's not only is it very good nutritionally, but they actually grow very well together, which I think again is kind of what they go over in second grade. But I wanted to touch on it again because I think it's pretty awesome.
My second grade didn't cover any of this shit, by the way.
No, okay.
I've never heard of the Three Sisters until you brought it up.
Yeah, I it's not something I always think about, but it's yeah. like when I was reading back on history and stuff, you know, just kind of basic research here, I was like, oh yeah, like I totally forgot about that when they kind of went over. I don't think I remembered much right. at the time, but it was like, oh, this sounds so familiar now that I'm reading back through it. But again, it's actually kind of a classic permaculture technique. So like, again, I'm just going to keep linking. Probably yeah. for the rest of my life here, I'm just going to link everything back to this permaculture class. But anyway, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
So essentially, when these plants are grown together, so what would happen in the Wampanoag tribe, which is, again, the peoples that were living in this area at the time, they would actually catch herrings, like the fish, and they would build mounds of dirt over them. And that's where they would plant their corn. So the decomposing body of the fish would kind of fertilize their corn plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the corn was about 6 inches high or so, they would plant the beans and squashes around the corn.
Mm-hmm.
And then the beans would actually use the corn stalks as support. They would kind of, like you would use a trellis, you know, now a metal trellis or something nowadays. And so that would be used as support, and then the beans would act as a nitrogen fixer to help the corn grow. So like that wasn't an advanced science thing at the time. Just you know, hey, when we grow beans next to these plants, what do you know?
Yeah.
Like it helps them grow because corn needs a lot of nitrogen, and it's not readily available oftentimes. So having a nitrogen fixing bean plant. Which we did talk a little bit about nitrogen fixation in our soil microbes episode, if you want to refer back to that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was essentially the concept there was these plants would go together. Melons were actually also planted along this as well. the squash and the melons help keep weeds down, essentially. Right. And also help keep it kind of like a living mulch, if anyone's familiar with that concept. It's essentially a crop that it can be a crop, a harvested crop as well, but it's usually something that's grown around the base of your main crop that just helps keep moisture in by shading the ground, because that'll help keep a lot of moisture in just on its own, right. As well as just providing kind of a weed barrier, so not a lot of, you're just not getting a lot of weeds competing with your plants.
Exactly.
So that's what the melons and the squash were kind of used for in this particular situation.
Yeah. The best thing you can do to prevent weeds is by planting shit.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah. Who knew? There's nowhere for them to grow.
Oh, bare soil invites...
Yeah.
Primary succession weed plants. Weird.
Wow. They have.
What do you know?
The reason why they grow everywhere is because they, if there's an empty spot,
took plants away.
Yeah. There's nowhere for else to go.
Exactly.
Just tips, man. Tips.
Yeah. These little things that should be common sense, but just aren't. And they've been erased and socialized away from us over time. Mm-hmm. Another reason to give the land back. God damn it.
We don't even know what the fuck to do with it.
We don't know what the fuck to do with our land. So, So farm foods such as corn and beans made up about 70% of the Wampanoag diet at the time. They did have access to a lot of protein. Again, we kind of briefly talked about fish was probably a major meat protein source, I guess you'd say, as well as local birds. So... Very potentially it could have been wild turkeys or some other sort of fowl, but that's something that was very common at the time. But what's kind of cool too, native people today are really trying to reclaim these indigenous varieties of corn, beans, and squash, even sunflowers and things like that. It's kind of something to help provide access to healthy and culturally appropriate foods, to kind of help lower rates of diabetes, obesity, and which definitely affects Native Americans at disproportionately high rates. So very common in these kind of communities. And it's also a way just to kind of share traditional knowledge about agriculture and kind of getting that that education back to younger generations, and even kind of going over these new growing or old growing techniques. Mm-hmm. That, again, it's kind of like, I mean, permaculture is just, they always refer to it as just like a Bill Mollison himself, who kind of, at least coined the term permaculture, refers to it as like a, 10,000 year old idea that, was just brought up. You know, it's like, this is something that's been going on for years. It's just now we're acknowledging it and trying to actually, realize that, hey, people back in the day knew what they were doing, and people who lived on the land and, were really close to it, they're the ones we should listen to when it comes to protecting and taking care of our land.
Yeah, so, who knew the quick and easy route doesn't always work out well?
Yeah, pouring fertilizer on the ground, which we never had before 1950, is not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Crazy.
There's nothing can go wrong with this idea.
No, not at all. So anyway, just kind of broke down these three plants and just had some kind of fun facts about each one, if I can just go through that.
Do it.
All right, so number one, squash. Mm-hmm. It's in the cucurbita family. This probably most commonly associated with pumpkin during this time, but also you got to think about acorn squash, butternut squash. That was probably available during that time as well, during the first Thanksgiving. This is something that's native to the United States in particular. Down through kind of Mesoamerica area. It's a type of berry. It's technically a pepo fruit, which means it's a fleshy, several-seeded fruit, which develops from one flower. So essentially, the one flower divides up into several what are called carpels, so you can kind of get that, like if you think of a pumpkin, that kind of the rings around it, and it typically develops a firm or tough rind. So that's something you very much see with all kinds of squashes. So technically it's a berry. So fun fact for your Thanksgiving table if you want to sound nerdy or knowledgeable, whatever you
care
to call it.
Every time I try to, the banana is an herb.
Yeah, it is.
You know how many times people are just like, uh-huh, sure.
Yeah, I'm usually the most interested person in my fun facts, yeah. But hey, you never
maybe
know,
be
someone
at a
out
fun
there.
Table.
Yeah, we don't know what you guys' situation is. That's why I gave it as a suggestion.
Yes, please.
You don't
try.
Have to. Oh my gosh.
May the cool people be with you, because
yes,
they're not with
I
us.
I hope so. Nope. One thing I found interesting, we import more squash than any other country. 90% of it comes from Mexico, which again, kind of where it was originally native anyway. It's, you know, it definitely spread out through the United States and Mesoamerica, but at least that's where it should be grown, if anywhere.
I mean, think
about it. That makes sense.
No winter.
Yes. Let's start there. Yeah. Yeah, so there's actually evidence of domestication of this plant over 10,000 years ago. So it has a very rich history in Mesoamerica as far as being an edible plant, very important to a lot of cultures, Native American and otherwise, in this general region. And California produces the most squash out of any other state in the United States, but we still import 90% of it from Mexico. It grows very well here. So that actually makes sense, but it does need a lot of water. So still, you know,
not a
And what I found interesting, I don't know why I never really thought about this. This is probably super obvious to a lot of people and I'm just really late to this game, but I never realized the difference between summer and winter squashes.
Oh,
typically winter squashes have, a harder rind to them, so you're thinking the butternut, the pumpkin, things like that. And then summer squashes have an edible rind, like zucchini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Never occurred to me. I was just like, oh.
Wow. My mind is absolutely blown now.
Like, wow. I guess that's a pretty simple way to, I mean, aside from the time of year, but if you're just looking at them, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, that's an easy way to remember it.
Yeah.
Hard soft. Okay.
Yeah, makes sense. Like,
anyway, yeah. So
doesn't
that's,
need to protect itself from anything. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think corn I had the most facts for, because that this was, you know.
Do it.
So much about corn in the United States, especially. It's just, it's freaking everywhere.
There's entire states of corn.
Yeah. Find one, like, food, like, I guess nowadays it's probably more common, but like, find one processed food without corn syrup in it.
Seriously.
I dare you. Like, again, more common nowadays, but like 10 years ago, much more difficult. Mm-hmm. So corn is has the botanical name of Zea maize. Mm-hmm. Particularly the variation of Indorata is what the colonists called Indian corn or calico corn.
Okay.
But all corn shares the same species and genus. The Zea maize.
Okay.
So the variations change, but all corn is from that same species and genus.
Right.
So just to say, it's like, you know, there are different varietals, but all the corn we eat today is some varietal of the original corn that was used back in the day. There's evidence of cultivation up to 7,000 years ago, again in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So that it's not as old as squash, which I was actually kind of surprised by. And this is actually considered a caryopsis fruit, which means the seed coat is fused with the pericarp. So that's kind of the fleshy part. Like if you think of like an apricot, like the fleshy part, it means that's actually fused together. Right. So that anyway,
it's not really peelable.
It's like fused. Very, if, you know, you'd have to be very precise.
You'd have to be a weirdo to try to peel the
very much
skin
a weirdo
off of a kernel. Corn kernel, or even a peach, like,
right?
Skin. Like, you just
it's a commitment.
Eat it.
It's possible.
You could.
Just difficult.
You would just live at an asylum and be, have someone, like, spoon feed you cornmeal during your lunches because you couldn't swallow.
Right.
That's
that would be an interesting life.
Yes.
We're just gonna,
enjoy it.
Go, you do you.
Yeah, there's no judgments here.
Yep. So corn also has the most acreage of any crop in the United States. Mm-hmm. About 91.7 million acres as of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So just to put that in perspective, our country.
Oh God,
that's a big area. Yeah. So corn is actually a grass. Mm-hmm. So sorry, going back to the whole banana is an herb. Yep. So it is technically a grass. And popcorn is actually a type of corn called flint corn.
Oh,
that is used. So it's a special varietal. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that either.
It's a good variety to choose to pop.
It works for whatever reason. I'm kind of curious how many tries it took to get to that variety.
Right, you know what? I'm just going to burn all of this.
Let's see
which
what
one works the best for a really hot dish I'm going for.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
It explodes?
This is amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
I thought that was cool. It's like, oh, okay, special variety. I remember I learned this in when I took the SATs. I had the best SAT essays to read in the English section. To this day, I remember them all.
Oh,
I thought they were amazing. And one of them was about baby corn.
Oh my gosh, that
and
sounds
they fun. Were only amazing to me. Yeah. Like
everyone else was like, who gives a shit about baby corn?
Yeah, why do you? I do, goddammit. Yeah. It's just young corn. They just pluck the corn too early. It's like, what the hell? Leave the baby corn alone.
It is really
surprising. Really need this?
It's like the opposite of what you think baby carrots are. You're like, right? Oh, they plucked the carrots early. No, they just drill down the carrot to become a baby shape.
Exactly. It's so upsetting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that always upset me.
Yeah.
Also, I learned that I have a lot of context for my corn facts. Sorry.
I love this corn.
Do you remember you were in my class, in Doug's class, when we did we were each assigned a country, I believe.
Yeah, I was assigned the purely meat country. It was awful. There was no plants involved.
That was amazing. What was it, Mongolia?
Yeah. It's like they don't eat anything besides meat and cheese from their yaks.
I remember that. It was hilarious.
Had
she had
up
no
with a
plants.
Meal, and I was
no
like,
plants.
I'm not gonna. What am I supposed to do with a meal for this shit? This is just meat.
Oh my god.
It was horrible.
I had a better. I have no idea why that was even on the list, but yeah, I got Mexico, so I got super lucky, and mine was a lot of fun. But one of my favorite things I learned from that was I learned about huitlacoche.
Okay.
So it's actually, and I've eaten this before, it's absolutely freaking amazing. It's what we, in America, call corn smut.
Oh, yes!
It's a fungus that grows on corn, typically, and when it presents itself in America, we chop it down and call the corn a loss. But in Mexico, it's a delicacy.
Yes.
This fungus. It's absolutely, you know, like a mushroom. It's
any other
fungus.
It's
perfectly edible.
Like, wait a second. Let's think about this for like 2 seconds.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. Just a consideration. And it's absolutely delicious.
But
so
we'll
it's something...
eat moldy cheese.
Yes, we will have no problem with our cheese caves.
Fungus corn is completely different.
That's where we draw the line. Oh my god. Corn was used as a substitute for coffee in the 1800s.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so coffee was really expensive at that time, and Americans ended up starting to use parched corn as a coffee substitute. And also the ashes of burnt corn cobs were used as baking soda.
Oh, wow.
As an alternative. Yeah,
I knew that that's why tea was a huge thing, because it was cheaper, because you could reuse the tea leaves. You can't really reuse coffee grinds, so that's why the whole Boston Tea Party was a thing, because people, and they were British, so of course
they're
they wanted their tea.
Intense about the tea.
Yeah, tea was very a big deal. Yeah,
right. Corn is also an ingredient in fireworks.
I actually did know that.
Oh, okay, that was interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, God, they use it in everything: paper, antibiotics. Glue, insulation, paper, already said that, ethanol, shoe polish, cosmetics, detergent, paint, and all kinds of stuff. Right. So
I do have some corn facts to add.
Oh, okay.
So
all right.
This is more Thanksgiving related.
Okay, so that's probably better.
I love learning about corn. So this is super helpful. So corn was shown to be plentiful during the first harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also possibly served. I mean, again, there is no way to know.
Yes. For sure. Right. It was definitely available.
It was
we
available.
We just don't know if it was eaten.
We just don't know. Again, written in Old English. They were very vague in their descriptions.
Yes.
But it was not served the way that most people think about it these days. So mm-hmm. corn would have been removed from the cob and turned into corn meal. So it's not like, oh, ooh, okay. I want a cob. I want a corn on the cob. No, they didn't do that. And
probably more
it
of
was
a...
boiled and pounded into like a thick mush and became mm-hmm. more like a porridge. And and it was occasionally sweetened with molasses. But this was not, ooh. During the time of the Thanksgiving, sugar was nada. There was no sugar.
They ran out.
So it was never a sweet dish. So if you think mm-hmm. about corn at the first Thanksgiving, it was most likely some kind of porridge or corn meal at
masa,
the time.
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you don't really see corn on the cob at the
first
Thanksgiving, which is what you would picture. Gotta, I feel like a lot of pictures show.
Right.
Show like, ooh, I'm going to put like some slabs, some butter from all the cows that are living in the first
United
Thanksgiving.
States.
Yeah, you know, I'm just going to go to my dairy farm the next state over.
Local.
Oh, wait, there's no fucking cows here yet.
We haven't gotten that far.
Just think about this. Corn meal was the thing.
Right.
More of a porridge dish. So that's kind of like my addition to the corn
facts. Okay, no, I appreciate that. Yeah that makes sense. All right, so just have a few bean facts to finish that off. So the botanical name is Physiolus vulgaris.
Nice.
It is a legume, which is a seed that comes in a pod. The pod is the actual fruit part. The bean that you're eating is the seed, just to clarify that for anyone who's interested in
It's a good clarification.
Fruit facts. I'm always interested.
If you're listening to a plant podcast, I really hope you are.
Well, I just want to cover
my
bases.
If you've made it this far.
That is true. That's a consideration.
Yes. Congrats to all of those. You deserve your own private cornmeal porridge. Enjoy.
Yes. Sounds great. So the world's tallest bean plant was 46 feet 3 inches tall.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I was like, that is impressive. It was domesticated approximately 8,000 years ago, so kind of in between corn and squash. It is grown in all continents except Antarctica nowadays.
Okay. That's a good place not to grow one.
Yeah, I think that's a fair decision
on everyone's part. Let's not thrive here.
Although it makes me kind of question the Arctic, what they're doing up there with corn.
How?
Again, sources. Might be questionable on some of these random fun facts. It is.
Take it
I'm
as
hoping
you will.
The Arctic is, maybe someone just forgot that was a continent. Anyway, North Dakota produces 1/3 of U.S. beans.
Okay. That's actually really surprising.
Yeah. Just, I don't know what's going on in North Dakota, but
lots of beans.
Got plenty of them.
Smells absolutely horrible.
Yep, that's gotta be an interesting main product. In ancient Greece, this one is very random, public officials were elected by beans. It was kind of a thing where they would have like 100 black beans and one white bean or something, and then whoever selected the white bean was the town.
I vaguely remember that
leader.
It was like,
I don't know, it was something weird.
It was the system was very strange back then, and it was like
I don't think it was for anything important. It was just kind of like for decisions, like whatever. I don't know.
They did
random.
Have
kinda like
the
for
first
jury selection,
democracy, but still, I remember. Vaguely,
I think it was for jury selection or something like that, like something along those lines. Where it's kind of like a random, you know,
like counters, like it was a counting system where
Yeah,
discoloration, and the bean was just the only way they had counters. Like We have computers that pick these things now, but back then,
yeah, now it was efficient at the time.
It was a beat.
Yes. It worked out for them. So from ancient times, beans were actually used as a device in various methods of divination.
Interesting.
So the fortune telling using beans is called favomancy. I enjoyed that a lot.
That's amazing. I did not know that.
Yeah, really enjoy that word.
Oh.
Favomancy.
I wonder if it's like, you know, like they throw the knuckle bones in the air. I wonder if it was originally beans that they threw.
Maybe.
They have like dark and light beans. And they had dark and light. They had black or white knuckle bones. So I wonder if that was originally beans. Sorry.
It's very possible.
Just random
thoughts. No, That makes sense. And I think this is my favorite fact. So in the 6th century, Pythagoras, of the Pythagorean theorem fame.
The best theorem out there.
The only one I remember from 11th grade math or whatever.
All those theorems.
Or 8th grade, whatever the hell. he had a deep philosophical dislike of beans.
Okay.
He thought they contained the souls of the dead.
As you would.
And it was actually said to have caused his death because he was being chased by like an angry mob or something. Mm-hmm. Again, this guy's life sounds just incredibly strange. But he was being chased by it like an angry mob trying to kill him. And he was slaughtered rather than cross this field of beans that he was about to run into. That's how much he hated beans.
Oh my god, he chose death over beans.
He chose death over being in a bean field. Not even eating the beans. Just like, they were like,
just being around beans.
Just being near them freaked him out so much.
That's like me being chased by a mom and being like, will you do this acupuncture session? Or will you get slaughtered by this mom? You know, fuck it.
It's more like, will you walk into will you walk into an acupuncture office or be slaughtered?
I don't even have to use the needles. I just have to go in the office. I still refuse to watch videos on acupuncture.
Oh yeah, it's horrifying.
It was on an episode and I was like, oh god, I can't even watch this.
Yeah, if it's on TV, I look away.
Yeah.
I can't.
No,
what if you fall?
I just literally think it's like, what if you sneeze? Like, there's just too many options of hitting. It's just the stupid. Why? I mean, I know there's scientific proof and you believe in what you believe, energy, all that shit.
Yeah.
Chakras, I agree. Whatever works.
I'm sure it works for some people. It would just stress me out so much that there's no way in hell it would have any benefits.
It would counter effect any kind of benefit I would get because I would just
hands down.
There is a needle in my skin. Get it out. I'm going to kill you in self defense.
Exactly.
With my fist.
Yep.
But that's
100%. Yep.
Yeah. But that's the only example I could think of.
Oh yeah, that's a great example. I agree 100% with that.
Yes.
And not that I would definitely go into the agriculture office before being slaughtered, but that
depends on the slaughtering. If they're slaughtering me with sharp objects, it's about the toss at that point.
Yeah, that's true.
But
that's
if
true.
It's like
if they're gonna kill you with a needle.
Stones? fuck it. Give me the stones. I think I can handle that. Knock me out. I don't care.
Right.
I guess we're back. Hello, everyone.
Hi. Howdy.
So I kind of covered some random things. So I talked about a little bit about potatoes and the, what else? A cranberry is a little bit. And with cranberries, it was kind of a very vague situation because they're it could have been cranberries or it could have been all of these other native fruits.
Sure,
which
sure.
A common theme of
a lot of
the
these.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So with cranberries, I'll start with that. So the fruits that were indigenous to the region were blueberries, plums, grapes, gooseberries, raspberries, and the famous cranberry. So what was very common was Native Americans actually ate and used cranberries as a natural dye, and the pilgrims might have been familiar with the cranberries by the first Thanksgiving, but they wouldn't have made what we consider like a typical cranberry dish, like a sauce or a relish or a tart orb. As we are it's like, I don't know what the fuck they
what the hell is that?
Yeah, you know, like a you know, you're like, a tart orb,
you know. What we would commonly associate, you know.
orb dishes as we eat. I'm taking this from sources and they called it tart orbs.
I'm Googling it and nothing comes up.
I think that they're just trying to be descriptive in there. The tart orb, aka the cranberry.
Oh! So, I was like, you can't just throw that term out. I know what it is.
I'm being a descriptive artist here.
Yes.
Using someone else.
I can see your painting of
the tart words. Orb. It's so orbital and tart. I can almost taste it through your description.
I was picturing some like modern like restaurant where it was just like this small sphere on your plate that's like
I think
kind of like those ice cube spheres, but it's like made of cranberry.
I honestly interpreted it as a dish, and I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, those scoops of, you know, relish." Like,
yeah, because I've also never
like,
if you use an ice cream scoop in a in a can of cranberry sauce, I feel like you'd get a tart.
That's
orb.
Kind of where I was going, because I was like, "Who calls it a relish?" Like,
that just sounds gross.
It's disgusting. So.
I guess that's what it is.
I know. It's
it doesn't
weird.
Sound right.
I know. It's
anyway,
like.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
Carry
it's
on.
Like, first of all, isn't. Like, what else is a relish besides relish?
Right? Yeah, I never thought about that. It's kind of like the whole jam, jelly, marmalade thing, where it's like, it depends on what type of.
Don't get
or
me
like
started.
What part of the fruit.
Every
it's
time.
It's fairly simple.
I just say
the marmalade
like,
has the rind, the jam has pieces of fruit, and jelly has no pieces of fruit.
I just remember going to the store and Ethan trying to figure out which one he wants to get. I'm like, it doesn't fucking matter, just pick one. It tastes the same. That's all.
There are some very intricate differences, Tori.
I'm just like,
you don't understand.
Strawberry is strawberry. Grape is grape. Who
I think
cares?
I prefer a jelly. I like a piece of fruit.
I don't care. I care if it says
well,
strawberry.
I will not send you jam
or if it's
shopping.
Yeah, please don't, because I'll just buy I'll probably buy you relish. So I'm like, it said grape.
Good point.
That's all that I know. Anyway, so
sorry.
Cranberry, relish, or sauce. It's up to you. But pretty much wasn't like that back then. And that's because back then the sugar, which traveled, aka taken in sacks with across the Atlantic on the Mayflower and the other two ships that I can't remember. They were pretty much depleted by November 1621. So cooks didn't really begin boiling cranberries with sugar until like 50 years later, and that became like a mixture, and that was an accompaniment or a companion to meat.
Yes.
So back then it was more, it was tartar because it's a tart orb, and it was more eaten as like a fruit dish, like just the fruit, you know?
Right.
As you would pick a fruit.
Have you ever eaten a raw cranberry?
I'm not a huge cranberry fan, to be honest. I always skip that option.
Yeah. I used to love dried cranberries, but they always add a ton of sugar into them, so I don't really eat them much anymore. But I just popped a cranberry in my mouth. It was like, oh, it's actually pretty good.
Oh, really?
Never thought to do that before.
Yeah, I think I've only ever had them in salads. Like, they're just
salad. Like, dried?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, no, just like a, like, crazy. Not dried, just like a full-on cranberry. Undried.
I don't think I've ever had just a cranberry.
I also can't taste tart or sour you're things, weird. So I'm a terrible person to ask, but I thought it tasted pretty good.
Yeah, you know, then I'm not going to ask you.
You shouldn't. Yeah. But if you, did.
You can't taste lemons.
This is true.
You're going to be the last person I ask, is this too sour?
Nope. Sweetest like, thing yeah. I've ever had.
Same thing, why I'm never ask you, like, is there enough vodka in this? You're like, there's no vodka.
You won't even.
And I'd be like, stuff. I'm tipsy, and I had a sip.
Yep. Yep. Not a good consultant.
Nope. So that's pretty much my last little cranberry fact.
All right.
Is Americans consume 400 million pounds. Of cranberries a year.
Oh my god.
And 20
is it all at the same time?
I really hope not.
I mean, like Thanksgiving, not like
it's a year,
not all at once.
So I'm assuming yeah, most okay. of that is probably around the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah,
I mean, if you think about it, do you really just eat Thanksgiving food on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I mean, not all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've bought stuffing multiple times, and I've made it multiple times.
Oh.
It hasn't even been Thanksgiving yet.
I don't like stuffing. So.
Oh, what? It's fucking bread. How do you not like
it? It's moist bread.
The best kind.
I draw the line at the moisture. Okay. I've had good stuff. My aunt and uncle make pretty good stuffing, yeah, but generally, I'm not a
shit.
Stuffing.
I like mine wet.
I do not.
I like pretty much everything wet, so that's probably why I like it so much.
That could be a factor. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, not my thing.
Really, okay.
But
you know,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
understandable.
That's true.
Yeah, but you like your eggs cooked to nobody's business.
Yes, I do.
So
no,
I like mine
I like them cooked a normal amount. I just don't want them raw.
I want them considering whether or not they're finished. I like it when they're deciding, am I finished or am I a cooked egg or am I a raw egg? I haven't decided yet. That's where I like it, where they're a little runny.
Yours is practically a baby chicken by the time
yeah,
you're...
They're glistening. They're just... Yeah, I love it.
It's not like... okay, you guys. I've witnessed it. It's not okay.
That's why I don't let anyone cook my eggs, because I'm like,
yeah.
No, you don't understand. I like them.
If there's not a 50% chance I'm gonna get ill from this, I'm not eating it.
Nah. My stomach has built its hardness for a reason. it's
true.
A cast iron stomach because I
yeah,
only eat my
that's
eggs
probably
that
why.
Yeah. from the womb.
Yes.
But yeah, right. So that's all I got about cranberries, pretty much. And
all right.
I mean, native fruits, to be honest, because it could have been cranberries, could have
yep.
been grapes. We don't know
anything.
Let's not
We're
pretend
not sure.
it's a fact.
Yes.
The other plant I did, or I guess it was very vague, kind of similar to cranberries, is local vegetables. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to touch on it. Local vegetables that likely appeared on the table include onions, beans, I think what you touched on, lettuce,
yeah, yeah.
spinach, cabbage, carrot, and possibly peas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of those were possibilities.
Potential options.
Yeah. I
yeah.
mean, think about yeah. it. You're sitting down, you're writing about your meal. Are you really going to say, like, I know I have
this varietal,
this, and this. No, they're going to be like, there are some vegetables, there are some fruit, there was some meat, there were some fish.
By no means was there a botanist present.
Yeah, seriously.
Or a chef, for that matter.
At least speaking a language we can interpret. I mean, come on.
Right, right. That too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure someone was like, yeah, I know exactly what that is, but you're not going to document what I have to say.
Right, right. They didn't have a pen.
Yeah, seriously. That too. Like, for now, that's a good question. How do they write this down? Was it just ink?
I mean, I don't know. What do they have at that point? Quills?
I'm sure.
I don't know anything about the 1400s. Yeah.
I think it was the 1600s.
Oh, right. No. Yeah?
Isn't it 1621?
Oh, era? Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I was thinking 400 years ago, and never mind.
There's a 4 in it somewhere.
There was a 4.
Last one I touched on was the potato.
And oh, yeah. Yeah. That's
so I think we're familiar with it being roasted or mashed. There's like white potatoes or sweet potatoes. But what we know, there was none of that at the first Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It was encountered in native South America, and the Spanish began introducing the potato to the Europeans around 1570. By the time the pilgrims boarded the Mayflower, the tuber had neither gone back to North America or become popular enough with the English to hitch a ride. So New England native inhabitants have eaten other plant roots like Indian turnips or groundnuts. So that's just kind of in question whether or not, yeah, those were at the table, but the potato or the sweet potato that we know today were definitely not. So the sweet potato that we know joined the feast not until after the Civil War. And that was when Southern chefs jumped at the chance to show off like regional dishes. So one of the earliest methods of its preparation comes from slave plantations who worked on cane sugar boiling. And the people who worked on that would take a dish of sweet potatoes and then they would put boiling sugar over it. And the sugar was so hot that it ended up cooking the potatoes as it cooled down. So that's kind of where that sweet potato dish came from. It sounds absolutely amazing. Compared to like what my mom eats, it's like baked sweet potatoes with like marshmallows covering it with brown sugar. It's like, oh god, that's just too much.
Yeah.
They're so sweet on their own, just like
so sweet
sugar on their own. Like that's plenty. So that's kind of the origin of the sweet potato dish that we are more familiar with today. So none of that, the scallop potatoes dishes.
Yeah, no. Like you said, probably just maybe some local tubers at most, and that was probably it.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, that's a, where are you going to get
close,
the cheese?
But not.
The cows?
The butter.
Yeah, where are you going to get
a lot of crucial.
Yeah, all of the potato dishes are like covered in cheese that I know of, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so the last, I just have a few extra fun facts about Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
In general. Let's see. There's a male turkeys only gobble. So that gobble is, of course, a patriarchal thing. Terrible humans. And female turkeys cackle. So maybe if you want to be equally representative, gobble then cackle. Let's start that.
Let's think of the female turkeys who gave their lives.
Yeah. For all the tables out there.
Oh my god.
And then I know like the cornucopia, which I think most people are familiar with, is that kind of
possibly from the Hunger Games.
Oh, really? I don't even remember that.
Oh, really? The thing in, that had all the supplies that they're supposed to fight over?
That's right. That's right.
It was a cornucopia.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it comes from two Latin words, cornu, which means horn. Emphasis on
there
the shape of said cornucopia.
Yeah. And then copia, I read it was supposed to be.
Go for it.
Oh, sorry. I read it was supposed to be like a goat's horn. I think
it would make sense. Like, where else would they find a horn? And corpia meaning plenty. Yeah, sheep, exactly. And so its origin or its depiction coming from Greek or Roman folklore, which is the overflowing cornucopia, which is depicted as a symbol, which is an accessory carried by gods and goddesses like Hercules, Fortuna, Demeter. And this is described as an animal horn, so probably a goat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, think about it. there's goats in every freaking Greek myth. I mean, that was one of their herding animals.
True.
Goats and sheep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it was taken from the goat nurse of Zeus. So it was probably a goat horn.
Goat nurse?
Yeah. So there's a goat nurse of Zeus, which is Amalthea. And baby Zeus was being cared for and fed by this goat nurse. And then he broke off one of her horns. And then when he broke it off, it emitted a plentiful, oh my God, you have a cornucopia, a goat horn in your house.
It's a sheep horn.
It's a sheep. Where did you get that?
At the store in Utah.
That's so great. You literally have a true cornucopia. You are nothing but Zeus's past life.
I have a visual aid.
Yeah, you have a visual aid for a podcast. It's
very not helpful.
It's super helpful for a podcast. What are you talking
trust
about?
Trust me. Trust me.
It's beautiful. It actually, it's really gorgeous.
It is very nice. I really like it.
I remember one of my projects in school was to make a fountain that was the shape of a goat horn.
Yeah.
It was based in Utah. It was my water feature.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah. I liked it. Anyways.
Yep. Sorry. Yep, so continue.
The origin is Zeus, when being taken care of by his goat nurse, breaks off a horn of one of her goats. And as he does that, it produces food and nutrients for him. And so he gets fed by a supply of food from that horn. And that's the origin of the Horn of Plenty, which symbolizes prosperity, wealth, and abundance. And like most things, it was originally a pagan symbol and then adopted by the Christians and then used by Europeans for harvest festival and celebrations of bountiful crops in their celebrations and religions. And it also is used on currencies or coats of arms and even church decorations. So that's kind of the origin of the cornucopia, which is for some reason, I mean, I guess it makes sense because the Harvest Festival, aka Thanksgiving, is associated with plenty. So kind of how it came about to be associated.
It's a roundabout association, but
yeah, because you're just like, wait, so is this a physical event
or
is this a religious holiday? Like, how did this cross over? Wait a second. It was just a marketing scheme.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
But
do we get to talk about the Thanksgiving cactus yet?
That is my last fun fact.
What the hell?
Such thing. I don't know if you guys are familiar because you're true plant fans, and if you've made it this far, I now christen you or Catholicly, whatever call it. I'm crossing
trying to do a cross. Oh God,
I don't even know what symbol it is. You guys are now designated plant lovers, and you guys made it this far. There's such thing as a Thanksgiving cactus. There's a Christmas cactus, but apparently there's a Thanksgiving.
That wasn't good enough.
No, they had to make a Thanksgiving cactus, and this is the Schlumbergera truncata.
Yep.
And it is the same genus of the well-known Christmas cactus, but it is a epiphyte cactus. So meaning it takes root on other trees. So it takes
like an orchid.
Yeah. It utilizes the decaying leaf matter of trees for nutrients. It forms long stems that kind of look like leaves and long chains. So if you've seen a Christmas cactus, you kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And the Thanksgiving cactus and other members of the Schlumbergia genus are native to the mountains in Brazil. But the Thanksgiving cactus is a true cactus, though it does not look like one. It's actually a tropical plant, so it's not really well adapted to dry conditions like other cactuses, but it's a hardy plant and it can withstand a good range of temperatures. It looks just like a cactus.
It looks exactly Christmas like cactus. A Christmas cactus.
I think the flowers are like a little different, but it's like the same. But apparently they're different. I don't But
that's... Yeah, I'm just looking up. There's this one website on why is the Christmas cactus called the Christmas cactus, and they briefly mentioned that because they're forced to bloom during this time period, like these specific times of year, like November for the Thanksgiving cactus and December for the Christmas cactus.
Okay.
But it has nothing, they just force them to do that. So it's like, well, what?
So it's like,
what?
Why? Like, even
how did this begin? Yeah. Like, what are you, leave this poor cactus alone.
What was the original name? And like, what, like, yeah, what time did they start this?
Apparently there's also Easter cactuses, which bloom later.
Oh my God.
It's like, okay.
Can we just call these cacti what? At this point?
Yeah, like, is it not, I don't know, anyway. If I mean, if you're naming it because of the flower, but you're forcing the flower to bloom at this time, that really negates it. Like, you could call it anything. Like, just force a tulip to bloom. Like, get a greenhouse.
Just call it
now
over
it's
the
a Thanksgiving tulip.
The man, let's face it, it's probably man forcing this thing to bloom at the time. This is John's cactus, and this is Ken's.
Yeah,
cactus.
Yeah. Whoever came up with this brilliant plan. This anyway, so yeah,
cactus.
Never heard of a. Never heard of a Thanksgiving cactus, but there you go.
There you go.
If you need to bring a housewarming, hostess gift, I don't know.
Guest gift?
To your Thanksgiving. Gift? Yeah, what the hell is that called? If you need to bring a gift to Thanksgiving, consider the Thanksgiving cactus.
If you're one of those really weird
reason.
People who can't go to someone's house without feeling anxious about not having something to bring.
Yep. And, like a plant.
Yeah, and the host is like, no, no, I've got all the food. And you're like, But I can't not bring anything. Like, no, no, just bring yourselves. And you're like, yeah, that's what they say, but they don't mean bring it.
Oh my God. I've said that so many times and no one's ever brought me a plant.
Yeah, they should. Then they don't know what they're talking about. You need to bring something. Trust me, I am one of those
my
people.
My guests have been interpreting this wrong.
I am one of those guests who's like, do you really mean you don't want me to bring anything? I'm going to bring something.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I feel like anyone else, they would not want you to bring a plant, but I'm one of those people that's like, you can bring me a plant.
Bring
me all the plants you want.
If you invite me to Thanksgiving and I have a flight, I'd bring you a plant.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Next time. All right. So was that was everything?
That's
I think
all I
you
got.
touched on it all.
Yeah.
Do you want to do Thanksgiving pun battle?
Let's try it.
Oh God, I feel like that's vague enough.
Yeah, that'll be enough puns to my mind to wrap around.
Hopefully,
we'll see.
We always say that, and then there we go.
Whenever you're ready,
get my timer out.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's go.
I feel like I have plenty of puns to use. I'm full of them. I'm just gonna turk
I brought
away.
Oh yeah, I was like,
was
I brought
one.
The turkey to get us into the house.
That's a good one.
No.
I mean it's better than mine. I mean this is hard.
Wow.
I'm gonna cry, Barry, about how terrible this is.
I'm already crying inside.
Oh man.
Gotta gobble up all the good jokes.
Oh, that's
that aren't happening.
Yeah. Oh man. I'm stuffed full of terrible ones.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plantaholics.
Hope you can join us next week for more plant talk.
In the meantime, you can check us out on Instagram and Facebook, or visit our website at plantaholicspodcast.com.
Thanks, everyone.
See you next time.